It is 24 minutes after the hour. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark, biochemist, vigneron, and member of the Board of Creation Moments. Don is comfortably ensconced in a cold and drizzly environment this morning down in Garden Valley, Texas, where it's kind of rainy, kind of cold, but the cold doesn't compare at all to where David Allen Punt is right now. David, what did you say the temperature was up there?
Minus 13.
Hey, I remember those days so fondly.
Yuck it up, guys. Just yuck it up.
This is called gloating from the Lone Star State here.
I think that's what that's called, yes.
Yeah, yep. It is. Go ahead.
With the wind chill, it's minus 20.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, that's so. All right. Well, it could be worse, and it probably will be sooner.
And it will be, yes.
That is. Fascinating article in the New Scientist Daily Magazine here. I'll put a link in the chat window over there at brokenroadradio.com in just a few minutes there. But I want to read the opening paragraph. It has to do with evolution and species and the big debate over what a species really is. Here's a quote I think you'll find interesting. It's a Colin Barras article here. He wrote the article. He says, "Biology is a messy business. Witness these sage words." And I quote, "It is really laughable to see what different ideas are prominent in various naturalists' minds when they speak of species. It all comes, I believe, from trying to define the undefinable." Pretty strong statement. That's a quote by Charles Darwin. He wrote those lines in a letter to Joseph Hooker just before he published On the Origin of Species. Joseph Hooker, naturalist and an attorney, and largely responsible for perpetrating the whole evolution, I don't want to call it a theory because it's really not attained that kind of status, the hypothesis, the hypothesis, I can't say that. The hypothesis of evolution. Hypothesis. Thank you. Well, you're a scientist, Don.
We could put it in layman's term, a guess. It's a guess.
A wild guess. It seems that this whole article is about natural science retrenching a little bit and saying, boy, we've been confused talking about species. In fact, it starts off with a question, human or hybrid? It says, humans once mated with Neanderthals, so are we hybrids? How we see ourselves and the rest of nature is changing, raising the question of whether species even exist. And Don, I know in the Bible the word species does not appear, but the word kind does, a kind of animal, a kind of creature. What's the difference between kind and species?
Well, a kind is the original created kind. So here's the problem. When you talk about evolution, you talk about bottom up, but when you talk about creation, you're talking about top down. So if you're talking about bottom up, then, you know, of course, it opened with that quote from Charles Darwin. He suggested that in his Origin of the Species, even the title is he's trying to get at. Where did we come from, obviously? And so he used some observations about some things he saw on the Galapagos Islands and came to some major conclusions that, you know, one creature evolves into another creature, or then we get the amoeba, you know, amoeba to man, theory out of that. And so, you know, he suggested that everything was a gradual change from one to another, and in that regard, in that respect, you wouldn't expect any species because everything is just a gradation of something else. So you should be able to find all kinds of intermediate, if you will, species or animals or plants, for that matter, instead of distinct, types of animals. And later in the article, they talk about the white hippopotamus
rhinoceros, I think is what it is, yeah. White rhinos and black rhinos, yeah.
Anyway, they're all concerned that, the white ones are going to be going away because there's only two females left. And so we've got a conundrum. We can mate it with another rhino, but then we'd have a hybrid, because we're calling these two different species. But in the creation world, they would be called the same kind. Now, a kind, a very broad and general description of a kind is that if two animals can mate and produce offspring, then they're the same kind. Now, you have some exceptions. For example, you got the northern rabbit here in the Americas, in the United States, and you got a southern rabbit. And the northern rabbit can't breed successfully with the southern rabbit. But there's an intermediate rabbit that lives in the central part of the United States where both of them can breed and produce offspring. And so in that example, the DNA diverged enough that the northern rabbit, had enough differences in its DNA to not be able to breed with the southern rabbit directly, but you can get those two to breed if you go through the intermediate, central rabbit, if you will. But we creationists would say, well, you take, for example, all the dogs, and the dogs would have to include the wolves, and maybe even the foxes, and you take all of those, and the coyotes, and everything that looks basically like a dog, right? Mm-hmm. And you breed them all together, and you make it close to the natural kind. Because the original kind, if you're going from a top-down point of view, the original kind of animal had all of the genetic information. But when the kind then broke up and went to different areas, for example, after the flood, and when the continents broke up and drifted apart, then you had isolation of certain kinds, and our Creator designed us in such a way that we have tremendous variability within the kind. And a lot of that variability has been called species, even though it's still the original kind.
And that was really Darwin's error, wasn't it? I mean, who invented species? I mean, was there a single scientist or group of scientists or a university somewhere in Europe, perhaps, that coach me on this, because there's species, there's families, there's genus. I don't remember what the order is from my biology class in high school. I guess species is the overarching one, the big one. And then
No, it's not. It's actually it's one of the suborders. Okay.
So what is the order? Family, genus, species?
Family, genus, and species.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you got kingdoms. You got the animal kingdom or plant kingdom,
mm-hmm.
or the micro kingdom. I don't know what they call the bacteria and, mm-hmm. and viruses, for example. But you have the overall. But here's the thing: it was originally designed just as a classification system, as a nomenclature system, so we can tell one animal or plant from another animal or plant. But it tended to go too far, because, for example, if the plant happened, or the animal happened to have a different color, then it was given a new species. And
so instead of simply organizing our thinking, it has grown to control our thinking.
Well, if you go from, again, if you're thinking from an evolutionary point of view, then you have to name everything. Every slight variation is a new species.
Hmm.
If you're coming from a creation point of view, every slight variation is just a variation on the kind, and you call it the same kind. This is a dog. Now, you know, some of us have Havanese, like I do, and some of us have Chihuahuas and Great Danes, and, you know, we give them a name, you know, because they've been highly bred to have certain characteristics, and all that means is that certain genetic characteristics have been bred, you know, for a particular type of dog, for example, and it's lost some genetic information along the way. But, you know, you could take a Great Dane and somehow impregnate a Chihuahua, and it would produce a dog. You know, it's not going to produce something else. So a dog is always a dog, and we get confused because we come to the wolf, and the wolf looks like a dog. It's just very wild. And, you know, has these natural tendencies of wanting to, you know, come in packs and hunt. But it, too, is still a dog when you get right down to it, because, you know, it looks like a dog and it behaves differently. It's large. It's a large dog, but it's not as large as a Great Dane. And it's got, you know, it's vicious, as opposed to, oh, we can, you know, we can train dogs, and most of the time they are pretty amenable to humans and wag their tails and sometimes their whole bodies when somebody new comes into the room that they're familiar with. So they have some pleasant characteristics that we've bred, if you will, into them. And, you know, the same with the fox, for example. The fox, we've got within a generation or two, and we've spoken about this a long time ago, the fox can be domesticated, and it becomes as friendly as a dog. It's as if it is a dog, but, you know, you started with a different species called the fox, mm-hmm. and there's different species of foxes. You got the gray fox and the red fox and all these other, you know, foxes. But in the end, it's just a dog. You know, it's the dog kind. So evolution has confused the issue, if you will, in thinking that all of these slight variations, and okay, sometimes they're not slight, you know, a Chihuahua is bigger, I mean, is really small compared to a Great Dane. But we know that was selectively bred by humans for those type of characteristics. But when we see that in the wild, we somehow say, oh, that's a different species. So you run into the problem that, oh, you know, I got this, you know, rhinoceros, this white rhinoceros, for example, and we only have two females left, so obviously we can't breed them, but we want to preserve the genes, and so let's breed it so it's a northern rhinoceros. I'm looking in the article to find this because they laid out the problem pretty well.
Now, there's a northern white and a southern white, apparently, and now because the southern white is about to disappear, that has become extinct, they're considering breeding the two, the northern and the southern white rhino together. But then how to classify it? Would it be a new species? Is the question there, and confusion results. It says hybridization between animal species is common. Yeah, but that still presumes that the offspring is a different species as opposed to kind, which is seemingly a very simple definition. And if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying that if two animals can breed, then they're both of the same kind, as will be their offspring. It's as simple as that. And this nomenclature system that's been invented by science, I don't know, probably, 19th century, 18th century perhaps, simply complicates and reroutes our thinking in an untruthful direction.
Well, yes, and then you run into the, with these two examples, for example, all right? So we in one case, we want to preserve the white rhino. But if we breed it, you know, if we breed the northern white rhino with the southern white rhino, now they're both white rhinos. Mm-hmm. you know the fact that they're white, that's just a variation on a kind from the rhinoceros, you know, which typically is gray.
Mm-hmm. So why the dilemma? But yeah, it's overblown.
So there. Yeah, it very much so, because they're saying, oh, well, this is going to be a hybrid now because we've named these as two different species,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to saying, hey, you know, their DNA is pretty close to each other, and we can breed them, and now we'll have white rhinos again. It's just a variation on the kind, and so let's not get all...
And likely, then, the interbreeding between this northern and southern white rhino would simply be going back a step before they differentiated within the kind, and actually a more original animal.
Yes, a more original animal, mm-hmm. and probably a healthier animal, because mm-hmm. you get more variation in the DNA. I mean, you get more information in the DNA because you've got the information from the northern white rhino and the southern white rhino. And I don't know what the difference between these two are, that they deserve the different species name. But you know, this is the problem, because they're looking at it from an evolutionary point of view, and they're saying, oh, the northern rhino evolved differently from the southern rhino, and so if we mix them together, we're going to lose.
There's that presumption of evolution again.
It's all through this.
Yeah,
it is all through this whole idea.
Well,
of
and
species.
And they put it on the human doorstep too here, talking about having humans these days having traces of Neanderthal and Denisovan DNA in many living humans, and they're asking, are we a hybrid? What's the purpose of even bringing that up? It seems like we're all members of the same kind. That's so simple.
Well, because they've been classified as two different hominids, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in fact, you know, if you look at it from, a creation Genesis point of view, the only difference between a normal human as we see today and the Neanderthals is that the Neanderthals were older. I mean, they're older from the point of view, oh, we discovered these, we think these are, you know, hundreds of thousands of years, or, you know, tens of thousands of years ago, and these others aren't quite, you know, quite that old. But if you look at the ancestors directly from the flood, and you look at the two, they should have common DNA in DNA markers, because they both came probably from the Japhites. Because the Japhites, as we talked about, in a recent program, they migrated north.
That would be Noah's son, Japheth.
Japheth. Mm-hmm. And so the Japhites, his clan, if you will, migrated north. So the Neanderthals, they've got the furrowed brow, and, you know, they look more primitive. But if you could grow, if you could live as long as the Neanderthals lived, you would start to get a furrowed brow as well. And so they're just humans, but they lived longer, and people lived longer after the flood, especially immediately after the flood, than they do now. So now, you know, our age is, you know, our typical average age is 70 to 80, 80 if we're righteous, you know, 70 if we're not. In general, I mean, these are general terms. Obviously, we got people living to the hundreds, but Moses lived to be 120. These folks, you know, like Noah himself, who was you know, quite old, you know, in the Bible. So these are just the patriarchs, or some of the earlier patriarchs that happened. Maybe they were among the first migrators to the region.
You know, this is so fascinating, because what you're saying is, in discovering Neanderthals, the knee-jerk reaction was to classify them as a species. Again, that artificial nomenclature attached to them, when they were basically older individuals, because they were closer to the original DNA than the men who discovered them.
Clarifying for just a second.
Yeah,
sure.
White rhinos and black rhinos are in a different species, so they can't interbreed and they can't produce, which is one of the reasons that the black rhino is becoming extinct. I've been doing research while you guys are talking here.
Well, that would be like the rabbit that Don brought up, where the north and the south can't. But we're in the article, it's white versus white, northern white and southern white. I erred by saying black rhino. Yeah.
Okay. So it was your mistake.
Yeah, it was my mistake. That's not unusual.
You know, I can understand that makes sense, that the... had to catch a sneeze there. That makes sense that if they're of a different species, they don't, and they can't reproduce. I mean, there are species of mules, for example, that, or maybe mules as a group or as a species or as a critter don't reproduce.
Because they're hybrids with a the donkey, for example,
and a horse. Yeah.
So you're mixing, and maybe the donkey and the horse were the same kind, you know, at one point in time, because they obviously can breed, but their offspring, there must be enough genetic variation there that their offspring can no longer breed, even with each other. So you got to keep producing the the mule or the, you know, so, or the donkey.
I don't know it for a fact, but that may have been induced by man as well, as they've done with other sets of animals, like dogs, for example.
Right.
Breeding for the special characteristics of a mule. Mm-hmm. Because whatever, I'm not familiar with mules firsthand. I've known a few jackasses in my time, but no mules. So here's
the problem. I want to get back to the Neanderthal, because it's an interesting story. So we've called the Neanderthal pre-man, or a hominid. This is a pre-human. We can't put them in the same species as the human because of their furrowed brow, because of the skull, you know, looked enough like a ape skull because of the furrowed brow and other characteristics. But in actual fact, these are much older, and, you know, it's a little confusing. Let's say they live to be 300 years or 200 years old, you know, after the flood, whereas we are living, like I said, to 70 or 80, 90 years. And so we are not aging enough to develop the furrowed brow that we normally would anyway, because the bone keeps growing. We don't necessarily grow in height anymore, but the bones keep growing. And so the result is that, the older you get, the more ape-like you become. And so therefore, they classified them, and it's only a classification, that as a non-human. And so what we have, a non-human now breeding with a what we think is a full human, and we only have teeth and various other things, you know, from the other, then it creates a problem from an evolutionary point of view. It is no problem from a creationist point of view, because they're both humans. And they're both probably came from the same parentage.
And the nub of this is it's the artificial structure of nomenclature created by man that's creating the confusion, and keeping people from seeing the truth of a simple kind. Mm-hmm. And we've learned a lot today. Interesting point. I put a link to this article in the chat window, but the New Scientist Daily loves to ask you to subscribe before they give you the whole article. So if you click on that, you probably just get the first couple of paragraphs, and you can decide for yourself if you want to pay $25 a month and get the rest. But the link's there anyway, and it's an interesting article. And all I can say is, Don, thanks very much for explaining it to us here, the difference between species and kind and how significant that really is, particularly with respect to, say, Neanderthals. And David, I want you to lean into the camera a little bit. I want to check your brow a little bit here. Don, you're right.
It's beginning to show.
Is it starting to show? I think so.
Don Clark joins us just about every Tuesday morning. He's a member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to point out their website to you, creationmoments.com. You can link to it from brokenroadradio.com, and you'll discover a resource that, well, it's invaluable in explaining to you and, explaining and giving you the scientific thought behind the biblical story of creation. It's a pretty amazing place, creationmoments.com. Don, thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
Okay, very good. Then you folks have a great week.
You take care. Bye-bye.
See you, Don.
Bye.